sealed portals directly connected to the netherworld, a dark dimension filled with inhabitants willing to rent their services to the Dungeon Lord. Of the three, the Scrambler was the most urgent, because Ed's main line of defense for the dungeon was that Nikolai didn't know where it was located. Levy had assured him that dungeons had a natural resistance to low-level divinations, but high-ranked spells could override that resistance. Advanced-ranked spellcasters were expensive to hire, and not exactly common in Undercity, but Nikolai had resources and was determined. The drone permanency was simply too useful to ignore. A permanent, respawning workforce that could handle tasks day and night without rest? Yes. Ed could use them to reset traps, maintain food, scout for plants, tend to farms, and even expand his dungeon. The last one, the Netherworld Portal, was a great risk. Just because its inhabitants were willing to work for Dungeon Lords didn't mean they'd be willing to work with Ed, or that he'd be willing to work with them. But he needed expert tutoring. Levy was a starting witch, so she lacked books, knowledge, and tools for her research. Alder needed teachers to help him come up with new bardic utterances, and Ed himself needed teaching about magical items and, more importantly, the kind of Dungeon Lord exclusive talents that he could buy when he had the appropriate skill ranks. It'd be irresponsible not to at least check if the Netherworld natives were useful. 250 Vifaras was a lot of money. Alder had told him that a single Vifara bought about 25 loaves of bread. A man could sustain himself on a loaf of bread a day, as long as he also had some occasional vegetables and meat. That made for 18 Vifaras a year, at minimum, to feed a man. So the three upgrades cost as much as sustaining more than a dozen peasants for an entire year. No wonder dungeon lords act like they're royalty. They have to be to sustain this kind of expenditure. Thinking about food reminded Ed of his projects. He headed for one of his pre-built rooms, a rectangular chamber about as big as the main hall. Using his evil eye, Ed visualized one of the dungeon designs, which appeared in front of him drawn in bright, arcane lines. According to the description, the feeding house would let him take a bit of the pressure off of his scavenging parties, but to what amount he wasn't quite sure. A line of drones brought him the necessary materials from storage. They piled them in the center of the chamber and formed a circle around them. Planks of wood, hills of dirt as tall as Ed, small amounts of straw, and a couple disgusting piles of batblin guano.
Okay, let's do this, Ed thought.
He willed the room into existence by focusing on the seat's ley lines and drawing power from them. The magic of his mantle activated, and he felt his heart jump inside his chest as a current like static electricity filled his veins and muscles. His fingertips itched, and his evil eye surged in intensity for a brief instant. At the same time, the drones began dancing around the materials in a fevered craze, a series of jumps and cartwheels without any evident purpose. They smashed against each other, stomped on the ground, returned to their original spots, then started over. The materials levitated straight up, like gravity had ceased to work. Dirt and guano smashed against the roof and began circling and expanding toward the edges, which prompted Ed to leave the room, since he was allergic to the possibility of raining manure. From the tunnel, Ed saw the materials melt and form a dense brown cloud that covered the ceiling. The itchiness in his fingertips grew in intensity and gained heat, not unlike placing his hands over a candle. Tendrils of brown mist extended from the cloud and rained over the chamber like a thousand monstrous worms. The mist spilled in those spots they hit and gained substance, first liquid and then solidifying. The chamber's floor was flooded by the liquid mist, which gave way to an ever-growing layer of wet dirt, so dark it was almost black. The scent of batblin guano was replaced by the smell of farms in the countryside, deep and penetrating, not entirely pleasing to Ed's city-grown nose, but not disgusting either. In the center, a thick tendril of mist transformed into a yellowish pile taller than Ed. Half the drones jumped to it and began giving it form with their hands, spitting here and there to better polish the material. Slowly, a wooden house gained form. It lacked windows and had a wide, singular aperture with no door.
Chicken den, was Ed's first thought.
But from where would the chickens come? Besides, this den was bigger than the usual version he had seen in movies and documentaries. An extended human family could live comfortably inside the enclosure. Another 2 chicken dens materialized to each side of the first one with help from Ed's drones. The cloud of mist diminished until it was barely there, and then what little remained rained over the dirt with thick, dark raindrops that smelled of cow manure. The drones looked at each other with wicked grins of pleasure, satisfied by a job well done. A pair of them high-fived by a corner. 3 of them ran toward the dens and jumped inside. Seconds later, the 3 of them stood in front of Ed, carrying in their hands spotted eggs as big as a basketball. They presented the eggs to Ed and, using gestures, pleaded for permission to eat them.
"No,"
said Ed instantly, which earned him reproachful looks and 2 raised middle fingers. He didn't care because he was too busy freaking out.
"Did the mantle just create fucking life?"
If he could create life from nothing, that was it. Good game, well played, but he had won it already. He'd defeat Charon in a couple days, easy, no sweat involved. The possibilities extended in his mind in glorious flashes. Magical bioengineered viruses that only killed mind broods, microbes that ate rock and secreted gold, monsters that would make gods weep in fear, living mountains that served as dungeons. Dragons. Dragons with lasers attached. The middle drone offered Ed a sealed parchment letter with a scarlet stamp. Ed took it as his daydreams dissipated. The stamp was engraved with an open eye halfway devoured by a disembodied mouth. Murmur's symbol. Underneath the eye rose a pyramid with 2 curved horns growing from its sides. Under the pyramid, the words Saint, C, and T were stamped in official-looking typeset. Ed brought the parchment into the light of a nearby torch.
"I wonder if people can engrave runes in parchment," he thought.
He decided to take the risk. The letter seemed to be a part of the dungeon room design. He opened it.
He didn't die.
Carefully, he took the parchment out. It was a yellowish piece that exuded dignity and elegance, and read it.
Dungeon Lord Stupendous First Hell Chicken Farm Kit. A St. Clair and Tillman Financial Services quality product. In proud collaboration with the Archlord Alaric Everbleed Trust for the Pauperized Dungeon Lord, and with the unholy blessing of his Dark Majesty Murmur. Made in the Netherworld, we support local nefariousness. To his or her ominousness, Lord or Lady Edward Wright of the Haunt. We are pleased to present you, free of charge, with 1 Dungeon Lord Stupendous First Hell Chicken Farm Kit. It contains all the necessary equipment to start and maintain a hell chicken population capable of feeding up to 30 humanoids. Included in this kit are starting package of fertilized hell chicken eggs, starting Imp Felonworth seeds to feed the chickens, potion treatment, heroic rank, for both seeds and eggs to maximize growth and encourage reproduction, security runes, heroic rank, inside the dens. Our hell chickens' eggs are treated by our best warlocks to nullify the hell chickens' natural bloodthirst. All drones are capable of performing the required regular maintenance of the farm. Detailed instructions can be found in the back of this pamphlet. For best results, chain a minimum of 3 drones to your farm using the drone permanency upgrade. Important: ignore at your own peril. Third-party tampering of the security runes will void the guarantee. Under no circumstances are the hell chickens to ingest meat of any kind. Under no circumstances are the hell chickens to come into contact with water past midnight. If you wish to abandon your dungeon, make sure to stop regular farm maintenance after you have vacated the premises, not before. We at St. Clair and Tillman do not make ourselves responsible for the immediate and absolute consequences of ignoring these warnings. We fucking told you. We wish you success in your cruel endeavors. May your nights be warm and pleasing to the dark. St. Clair and Tillman Financial Services. Other products in the Dungeon Lord's Starting Kits line. Dungeon Lord's Murder-tastic First Torture Chamber Instruments Kit. Dungeon Lord's Impious First Sacrificial Altar. Dungeon Lord's Fabulous Creature Modification and Forced Evolution Lab. To receive the best deals and news on our upcoming products, please subscribe to our mailing list.
So I can't create life at will, said Ed.
He put the parchment down and instructed the drones to follow the instructions to the letter.
Probably for the best. I only toyed with the idea for a minute, already going mad with power.
On the other hand, the mystery of the letter was enough to overshadow the disappointment. St. Clair and Tillman of the Netherworld. Even though he knew it was dangerous, Ed's desire to take a look into that place intensified.
We can feed 30 people with this farm, he said aloud as he studied the eggs that the three drones had carefully placed in the soil in front of Ed.
That was, once the hell chicken population was up and running. Who knew how long that'd take? And he'd need at least 2 other farms the size of this one to adequately support his current population, plus other real farms. The problem was, winter was almost upon them, and the sunlight grew weaker and weaker with each passing day. He wondered if there was a type of enchantment he could use to grow potatoes underground. He had a passing understanding of hydroponics, and bet that he could try his hand at them if he figured out magic assistance.
We'll need to breed the hell chickens for a time, Ed told the drones. I guess St. Clair and Tillman aren't giving us any more free packages, are they? Very well. Then we won't eat our chickens unless it's unavoidable.
He set the rest of his original team to create 2 additional, similar chambers next to the first, and gave mental orders to the rest of his drones to gather the materials to build the dens in the soil. Movement at the corner of his vision drew his attention. It came from the eggs. The light of the magical torches nearby shone upon one of them, revealing a swimming figure inside, with a shape that Ed couldn't define at first, but easily bigger than a chihuahua, or a normal chicken. It turned out that when St. Clair and Tillman said, accelerated growth, they meant it. Seconds after the egg started moving, its surface cracked. A couple drones entered the room and brought Ed a pair of wooden spears, answering the mental command he hadn't even realized he made. He grabbed one spear and left the other at arm's reach. The cracks grew larger, and tiny pieces of egg fell down to the soil. A tiny claw burst out, followed by a creased pink finger. Ed grasped his spear firmly and considered calling for Kes.
How stupid are my friends going to think I am if I ask for their help against poultry, he thought.
And an instant later,
how stupid will they think I was if the baby chicken kills me?
Before he could will a drone to fetch the mercenary for him, the egg split open and tipped over. Thick, transparent fluid splashed into the soil, spewing a tiny cloud of smoke as it did so. A shape emerged from the egg, clawed its way across the soil, and wandered briefly around the vapor cloud. The silhouette had a vague, chicken-like complexion, but its proportions were all wrong. The neck was too large, the legs too big, and it had arms with claws that pawed at nothing. Ed aimed his spear at the shape as the smoke dissipated. The hell chicken studied him with eyes round as dishes in the color of blood. It had no feathers, because it was a newborn, only pink skin with black veins slithering under the muscle. Its beak was curved like that of a bird of prey, and it was serrated.
Ain't you the cutest, Ed whispered.
Levy was going to hate them. The hell chicken moved its head around like a confused dog.
What?
It asked Ed. As it did so, its beak opened for a fraction of a second to reveal a mouth filled with rows upon rows of needle-sized fangs and a black, worm-like tongue covered in yellowish saliva. Like all rational persons in the presence of teeth like those, Ed took a step back. The hell chicken studied him again with those shining red eyes, then lost interest and smashed its beak into the ground. As the monster scurried around the farm, Ed realized he had been holding his breath.
A pleasure doing business with you, St. Clair and Tillman, he said as he took a last glance at the parchment.
Then he examined the tunnels, which were all that stood between the netherworld poultry and the haunt's inhabitants. The other 2 eggs outside the den shook once more. Distant bawks came from inside the dens. Dozens of them.
Reinforced doors, at the very least, Ed said aloud. And a metal fence. Hell, let's see if I can get the mantle to make barbed wire. He gave the instructions to his drones. It was going to be a long day. Your dungeon engineering has increased by 2 ranks. Chapter 10 Dungeon Improvement.
Here, taste this,
Ed told Yorje. The blacksmith examined the clay cup with evident mistrust, holding it, but without drinking.
Ah, of course.
Ed grabbed the cup and took a long sip.
See? Not dead.
The blacksmith drank, winced, and put the cup down a little too violently.
This is the most disgusting, cheap, morally atrocious ale brew I've ever tasted. And let me tell you, I once partied with a Kaftar cackle back when I was younger. Wetlands, Edward. Where did you get this dung juice?
Courtesy of St. Clair and Tillman, Ed said with a shrug. Part of their quality product, Dungeon Lord's Decadentaculous First Home Brewery Kit. It came with the malt, barley, and so on, already prepackaged. I only had to have the drones add the mix into the machinery.
It honestly tastes like a Batblind pissed in it,
said Yorje.
You planning to torture prisoners by making them drink this?
Just a side project while the hell chickens grow, said Ed offhandedly. That's not why I wanted to see you.
Did you just say, hell chickens?
Ed pointed at the new, recently created tunnel behind the seat chamber. Its rough rock stairs disappeared under the floor. A couple drones labored on installing a reinforced gate made of cheap iron bars around it to keep people from stumbling in.
If you have time, I'd like to hear your professional opinion on something. Follow me downstairs.
Yorje twisted his lips at the thought of going inside the tunnel, like he feared that a horde of hell chickens awaited him at the end. Which was ridiculous, since all the hell chickens were safely tucked away in their own section of the haunt, now separate from everything else by a series of reinforced gates, barbed wire fences, and barbed wire fields, all constantly patrolled by dedicated spider warriors. If someone bypassed these security measures, a sign hanging at the door of the farm's gate simply read, in St. Clair and Tillman's own penmanship, "We fucking told you." Half the sign was missing, the other half was covered in bite marks, but Ed hoped it got the point across. Ed and Yorje went down the tunnel. The staircase brought them deep into the bowels of the earth, the magical torches shimmering their pale light across the rough steps. The low ceiling forced Yorje to walk hunched over.
"You're moving a bit stiff, Edward,"
Yorje said.
"How's the training going?"
Ed's shoes were slick with humidity, and he almost stumbled down the stairs when his footing slipped for a fraction of a second. He gripped the rails tightly. A tiny stream ran down the side of the steps, fed by the water that ran down the walls.
"It's the training," Ed said. "Kess didn't like that I skipped the first day, so she's been extra hard the rest of the week."
Yorje chuckled.
"I saw you and your friends running around the camp yesterday morning. No idea how you didn't freeze to death in the storm."
The memory made Ed's bones shiver. The storm had caught them when they were coming back from the run, and when they were the most tired.
"We never stopped moving. That's how we kept warm."
After they had dried off inside the haunt, Kess had ushered him into her own sadistic version of a weightlifting program. She had explained that it was the same variation the avian people used to raise their usually very low endurance, and that if her own people didn't complain while doing it, then neither should they. In fact, she raised the number of exercises for every whine she heard, which had thrown Levy into an almost suicidal loop of protest. The only one who hadn't complained once was Kleck.
"How are the storms treating your family?" asked Ed, anxious to change the subject, fearing that Kess would hear him think his complaints and make tomorrow's session extra hard. "You could move into the haunt, you know. There's no need to stay in those tents."
As it turned out, Staravos's winter had begun with constant thunderstorms. They lasted all morning and most of the day, barely giving the land enough time to breathe at night before starting all over again. Ed had never seen anything like it back in his hometown. Distant trees collapsing after the impact of lightning,
the flames challenging the rain of the storm, the mighty trunk splintering and disappearing into the sea of green.
"Trust me, I'd love to, but my wife would murder me," Yorjay said. "She feels safer near our people, and... well, our people don't trust you very much. What with you not allowing them to leave and all?"
Ed knew that Yorjay's wife wasn't very happy with the blacksmith, because of his decision to stay in the dungeon rather than leave for the countryside. The dungeon lord knew about it because the spiderlings were very curious creatures and had no concept of personal space. Ed couldn't convince the villagers to accept the safety of the haunt, and he wasn't willing to further strain their relationship by ordering them to abandon the tents, so the only thing he could do was to make sure their abodes didn't have any leaks. When the tunnel ended, Ed and Yorjay reached a closed, circular chamber carved into the rock via drone chomping. It was mostly empty, despite the size. The center was dominated by a cylindrical contraption made out of iron, almost twice the size of Yorjay. Under the sturdy iron legs that held it up was a pyramid of logs. More logs were carefully ordered next to the walls, covered in a tarp to protect them from the humidity. At the roof over the cylinder was a hole slightly smaller than the cylinder. Ed knew for a fact that the hole led all the way to the haunt's floor. Near the entrance, a workbench held Ed's recent experiments, and materials for drone transfiguration were strewn in a bunch next to it.
"What's all this?"
asked Yorjay, his eyes examining every part of the room carefully.
"I hope it'll become the reason we won't freeze in the winter," Ed pointed at the cylindrical contraption, which was actually the skeleton for what would become a furnace.
"We stockpile coal and firewood to send hot air through pipes below the haunt's floors."
Yorjay walked to the furnace.
"Some nobles warm their castles using a similar system," he said, "but it is very expensive to set up, and also to maintain. You'd need men to keep the fire running, and a lot of fuel."
A drone appeared close to Ed, scurried under the table, and came back out carrying a small pipe. The drone brought it to Yorjay so he could examine it.
"The drones are free labor," Ed said. "They can make the pipes easily, as long as I give them the material. This one is made out of clay. I asked Levy and Alder mentioned that Haligis uses lead piping in their castles, but I'm not too enthused about using that for the haunt."
Since lead was a poison back on Earth, Ed didn't want to risk it being the same in Ivalis, too. Yorjay shook his head. He took the small pipe out of the drone's hands and examined it.
"You're right to distrust lead. Eligian lead is rich with calcium impurities. It insulates it. But Stravos doesn't share that blessing."
He flashed Ed a grin.
"Clay works just fine. You'll have to replace it eventually, with all the construction you're doing around here. But it'll last nicely until you can afford better materials."
"Clay it is," said Ed.
Most of the cutlery of the haunt was built out of transmuted clay, because making it was so simple that the transmutation toll on the ingredients was tiny. It was the only material Ed knew of that was better to transmute than to make the old-fashioned way.
"You think you could lead the project? I know you are a blacksmith and not a builder, but the drones are experts in construction, so they'll handle all the technical parts. Just make sure that the thing works."
"To be honest, a warm haunt would do wonders to ease my family's fears. Maybe they'd let me move us inside the dungeon. With the drones working day and night, I think the hardest part will be getting your furnace right. It should take a couple months. But this kind of project normally takes years. And you know what? I have so much free time anyway."
Ed smiled. Yorjay was pacing as he talked, and the blacksmith's eyes flashed at the furnace with clear interest. Ed knew the feeling, because he'd felt the exact same way when designing this project. It was the challenge of having a difficult problem that he knew he could solve and had the right resources to do so. It was the same sensation of working all night on a complex computer code, looking for the tiny syntax error that he knew was throwing off the debugger. Annoying at first, but once he caught that first scent of blood... ah, the chase was on. It was the thrill of the hunt, one of the oldest emotions in the world. The athlete felt it while breaking a previous personal record. The detective felt it while uncovering a clue that everybody else missed. The barbarian felt it while caving in the skull of an enemy warlord. Mankind, as a species, shared the same obsession with problem-solving. Ed and Yorche shared a similar version of that obsession. They saw a system, they studied it, they found a flaw in the system, like a cold dungeon in the winter, and then they improved it. It was the way of the optimizer. And gods knew that Ivalis could use some optimization. Ed and Yorche made eye contact as the blacksmith paced. They had a childlike grin, two boys in adult bodies who were just realizing that the world is their playground. Your dungeon engineering has increased by 2 ranks. A few weeks later, Ed met with Andrina in one of the dungeon's newest chambers. He made a wide, sweeping motion with his arm to envelop the brewery.
Well? He asked Andrina. What do you think?
The herbalist examined the facility with critical, experienced eyes. A group of Batblins carried a heavy sack of Decadendaculus malt mixture to one of the copper machines that stood atop one of the several tables across the brewery. Barrels filled with either materials or botched batches of ale waited in every corner of the place. The barrels were made out of wood planks and sealed with tar. According to the instruction manual, the tar shouldn't add any flavor to the brew, but Ed was sure he could taste it.
Hopefully this project of yours won't go the way of the Hull Chicken Farms,
Andrina said. A single drone foreman instructed a Batblin on how to handle the fermentation bin. The Batblin dropped in a little too much yeast, and the smell of excess yeast wafted across the brewery. Ed withheld a sneeze.
We're still looking into what went wrong with those, Ed said.
I know what went wrong. Those damn fools at St. Clair and Tilmer are cheap bastards.
Another drone opened a brown sugar sack and looked inside. The critter fell down and disappeared into a cloud of sugar. On the opposite side, a boiling pan simmered next to a cauldron filled with boiling water.
Maybe, but their products are free, said Ed. It's a good place to start, in my opinion.
Malt powder?
Asked Andrina, reading from the stamp on one of the mixture bags.
Who the hell thought that was a good idea? Wetlands, Ed. It's no surprise the ale tastes like piss.
You know, Yorje told me you had a hobby. A brewing hobby, said Ed, using the indignation of the herbalist to move in for the kill. He said you made nice coin on the side back in Barova, making ale for the villagers.
Andrina put down the mixture.
Is that so? That big snitch. Brewing ale without being a member of the militant church is illegal, Ed. And you need a permit for alcohol like the Suika, she said.
Ed recalled that the Tsuika was a cheap, local liquor that peasants made in their homes.
So whatever you're thinking, be careful about it.
It's not like we can break Heligian law any harder, Ed said.
He shrugged, then gestured again at the brewery, in what he hoped was an alluring motion.
You could be in charge of all this, you know. Bring a little order to the chaos, and get a cut of the profits.
I'm a herbalist, not a damn tavern wench, said Andrina.
She crossed her arms and frowned. One of the Batblins, a female from the hidden camp that had recently moved into the haunt due to the storms, dug her fingers into a barley mix and tried to snort the powder, which she quickly came to regret.
With your help, the haunt may start making something people can actually keep in their stomach, Ed said.
Andrina sighed.
God's damn you, that's a very good point. Hogbus knows that the villagers could use some booze to calm their nerves. But where am I supposed to get the ingredients? Suika is easy to make, but barley and malt wheat, we'd need to go to the countryside farms for those.
Let me worry about that, Ed said.
He did his best to hide his triumphant smile.
I'll go with Alder to one of the other villages and trade some hell chicken meat for whatever you need to start.
And let you poor sod get swindled. They'll sell you weeds until you it's wheat. No, I'll go with you and choose the ingredients myself. Have Kiss tell your minions how to salt the hell chicken meat, and I'll teach them how to mask the flavor of the netherworld. Otherwise, you'll scare the villagers into forming angry mobs, and we all saw how your backblends dealt with those.
Having achieved total victory, Ed clasped his hands behind his back, thanked Andrina, and urged her to follow him. They left the brewery to the Batblin's care. Ed hoped there'd still be a brewery left when they returned, and crossed the haunt toward one of the newer sections that had sprung into existence during the weeks of Ed's renovation efforts. One of the new chambers sent puffs of heat out into the tunnel Ed and Andrina followed. The herbalist gave an interested glance inside said chamber as they passed by.
Is that Hjörge?
She asked.
What's he doing there?
That's the new blacksmith workshop, Ed told her, following the direction of her gaze. The workshop was about the same size of Hjörge's shop back in Barova, with one crude forge, built by the combined efforts of Hjörge and the drones, lording over all other tools. It stood like the trunk of a metal tree growing against a wall and rose into the stone ceiling, where it disappeared. The chimney ensured that no one would die of CO2 poisoning, but it also was a danger. The smoke came out by the top of the hill where a flying observer could notice it and pinpoint the haunt's location. Since, so far, Ed hadn't made any flying enemies, it was a problem that he could solve later. Hjörge himself worked close to the forge, using a pair of tongs to lower a red-hot piece of metal into a barrel of cold water. He was making screws, which were a bit beyond the capability of Ed's drones. A small group of Batblins stood near Hjörge and handed him tools from the benches nearby when he asked for them. Although everyone was covered in protective gear, most of the Batblins had minor burns in the fur of their arms and bellies. The blacksmith glanced at Ed and Andrina and shouted a greeting at them as they passed.
So that's where Hjörge went,
Andrina muttered.
The villagers were wondering if you had had him sacrificed.
You're kidding, right? Hjörge's worth his weight in gold, Ed told her. If I wanted to sacrifice anyone, it'd be Brett.
The governor had done little since his arrival at the haunt, but at least he kept quiet and gave no trouble, which was all that Ed could ask of the man. Zachary, on the other hand, had tried at least twice to convert the spiders into Alita's church. Andrina barked a laugh.
You wouldn't get many experience points out of that deal, let me tell you,
she said. The tunnel led them to a room about the size of Hjörge's workshop. Unlike the workshop, however, the place was mostly empty, except for a group of drones who labored industriously in the walls. They were carving a laser shark in bas-relief. The laser shark hovered over a cauldron, whose contents simmered under a badly rendered fire.
They can decorate now,
Andrina asked while she and Ed watched the drones work.
Started as soon as I got to Dungeon Engineering Skill Rank 9, Ed told her. I'm still trying to find out how to change the decoration. So far it seems they do whatever they want.
He had had to demolish several rude carvings and one obscene statue before the drones stopped that avenue of artistic expression.
So this is for you, Ed told her, if you want it. It's not as cozy as your hut, but it sure beats the tent.
He gave her a brief tour of the place. There were several cauldrons, all of different sizes, propped under the obligatory chimney. Empty rows, benches, and storage bins waited for Andrina to fill them with plants. Hooks hung from the ceiling, and brewing equipment for potions lay neatly ordered in workbenches and tables. Behind this room was another series of rooms and chambers that served as a fully functional house. It had a bedroom, a bathroom that would have running water as soon as Ed figured out how to adapt the piping the haunt was already laying, bed tables, a kitchen, and a living room decorated with ugly drone tapestry and clay cutlery. A single piece of artwork hung from the wall of the living room, a drawing of a Batblin made with the skill of a 3-year-old using crayons while coloring blind. It was titled, The Ranger Slayer in Combat. Ed had tried to take it down, but the drone's hurt expression had dissuaded him.
No one would accuse him of not being a patron of the arts.
Andrina took this all in with wide eyes, walking to every corner and examining each detail closely. One singular thing claimed her attention. She went to the table and propped it open. It was a book filled with blank pages.
Careful, the pages are brittle, Ed told her. It took Levy and me several tries to get it right.
As it turned out, Ivalis mostly used parchment, since they lacked Earth's paper production technology. But there were several Ivalian kingdoms that knew of paper. Ed had bent his drone's transmutation a bit to make it. The book was technically a part of this room's design, which he had dubbed the Herbalist Workshop. The plan had worked, but Levy had gone for a quick walk outside the haunt while Ed's drones performed the transmutation. Just in case.
How did you make it?
Andrina asked while she softly flipped through the pages. The book had a solid black cover, built with hardened leather.
Wood, spider poison, leather, spider web,
and a couple other things to make the glue, said Ed. It took a lot of attempts to get it right, but I'm adding books like this everywhere I can justify their presence. It'll be useful for you to make recipes, keep an inventory, and so on. Andrina returned the book to its table, next to the ink. Making the ink had been Alder's job, since, as a bard, he knew the most about writing instruments. He'd done a fine job at it after a couple trips to the forest, but the bard had refused to give up the recipe, citing bardic secrets. Ed suspected it involved charcoal, since Alder's clothes had been covered in the stuff after his trips.
I can't afford this,
the herbalist said softly.
It's too much.
You don't have to pay for it, Ed said. He dismissed the idea with a wave of his hand. It's all yours. The way I see it, I owe you. You healed my people, you stayed when you could have left, and you've helped keep the peace. And now you're the head of the Haunt's brewing operations. This is the least I can do.
Andrina took a moment to acclimate to the idea. She glanced across her new workshop, then smiled.
I like the place. It's going to need some work, but I can bring whatever's left of me up here.
Great, said Ed. When the Haunt starts making money, make a list of ingredients and whatever else you need that we can't make by abusing transmutation.
If I were any good with money, I wouldn't be a small village's herbalist,
Andrina said with a chuckle.
Ed, I believe you didn't just build this place as a random gift. Hjorge is making pipes and weapons in his new forge, isn't he? He has a part to play in whatever plan you have. What's mine?
Just be an herbalist, Ed said. Do whatever it is you do. Heal people, study new potions, sharpen your skills. The way I see things, the Haunt isn't going to survive by having one or two people with thousands of experience points. It'll survive by everyone's combined expertise.
You know, other dungeon lords would have bored hearing something like that,
said Andrina.
We all remember Lord Kael's reign before you came around, and he only saw dungeons as means to an end. No more than structures to be built and then abandoned.
Perhaps that's why Kael isn't around. I'd like this place to last. To tell you the truth, despite the insane, broken-hearted murderer, the brain-eating monsters, and the eldritch abominations, I like it here. Ivalis, I mean. Hopefully we can make it last. Whatever it is we have going here in the Haunt. Can't you feel it too?
The air around the workshop had grown heavy. Andrina's expression was a mask.
Yes,
she said at last.
I guess I can.
The hand that she placed on her new book was worn by age and a lifetime of labor.
I guess I'll start by asking Alder to teach me how to read and write.
That's a great start, said Ed.
Your dungeon engineering has increased by 2 ranks.
These security runes are all very old,
said Levy. She was examining a part of one chicken den, currently displayed on a long work table. About a week and a half had passed since Ed's meeting with Andrina.
That shouldn't have stopped them from working, right? Ed asked.
He examined the glyphs over Levy's shoulder. They were no different from others he had seen before, except, perhaps, that their blue engravings shone slightly dimmer.
No, not really, unless they lose the charge or their circuit breaks. But that isn't the case here,
said Levy.
The problem is, potions do lose their effects due to the passage of time, and the instruction pamphlet mentioned that St. Clair and Tillman used tranquility potions to rein in the hell chickens. Attitude.
Ed nodded to himself.
So St. Clair and Tillman haven't been maintaining their Dungeon Lord's starting packages for a long time, and the mixes have gone bad. Well, some of them. The accelerated growth enchantments didn't go bad. Obviously.
Obviously.
Levy shuddered. Potions past their expiration date explained the taste of the ale experiments. It also explained the Jurassic Park situation that had developed inside the, now barred, part of the dungeon where the hell chicken farms were housed. Last time Ed had sent a scouting party to take a look inside had been about 2 weeks ago. The surviving spiderlings had reported that the hell chickens had devoured most of the barbed wire fences and were now about as tall as Yorje. Ed had collapsed all tunnels except for the main entrance to the farms and tripled the security. Kess's traps had managed to capture and kill a couple young ones, and the mercenary and Andrina were now treating the meat so Ed could sell and trade it in the nearby villages. He was also fully intending to eat it himself. Weeks with only potatoes and scavenged food for sustenance had left his body craving meat like a vampire craves blood from a nubile neck.
"Bunch of irresponsible assholes,"
said Levy.
"Their magical lore isn't all that complex from what I can see. Give me enough resources and enough time to study my spellcasting, and I bet I can make runes like these. Hell, I'll make them better."
"And Andrina, with enough ingredients, can make tranquility potions," Ed thought. His farm project wasn't yet a total disaster, and if there was something he was good at, it was leveraging unexpected turns of events into advantages. Kind of. Case in point.
"You know what? I'll take you up on that offer," Ed said happily. "Walk with me. There's something I've been meaning to show you."
"Dear gods, Albert tried that very same line on the blacksmith's daughter a day ago,"
Levy said. That explained Alder's recent gloomy look and black eye.
"In this case, it's not a line," Ed assured her with a laugh.
She followed him across one of the newer tunnels he had built over the past few weeks. The haunt was quickly becoming a complex array of tunnel networks and chambers whose locations made little sense to anyone but Ed. A small group of drones clung to the upper section of the tunnel's walls, standing atop each other's shoulders to gain height. The top drone was eating the rock where Yorjay's piping would go. Levy eyed the work in progress with clear pleasure. The constant storms of Staravos's winter, according to the locals, were only the introduction to the incoming sleet and freezing rain, but introduction or not, they had forced the haunt to take measures in earnest against the elements. Cotton and linen curtains covered the walls of all living quarters, to better keep in the heat. Ed had installed chimneys there, too, and most of his drone force could be found piling up wood in the storage sections. Part of his mining workforce had run into coal a while ago, and the haunt was now stocking up on that mineral, too. With any luck, the dungeon would reduce its tree consumption in the next year. In any case, Ed planned to teach his drones to plant new seeds in the tiny section of the forest his haunt had left bare. It was both an environmentalist measure and a practical one. The rows and rows of stumps were a telltale sign of a nearby dungeon that not even the most dim-witted inquisitor would miss. The pipe project would be ready before next year's winter. In the meantime, the villagers had begun to sew pelts to the inside of their coats and jackets for extra insulation, and the haunt's inhabitants had quickly wised up to the practice. Levy's fur scarf made her look more like a shaman from the marshes than a witch. Ed's own shirt now sported lines of fur around the seams, and they had made a noticeable difference. As soon as he earned enough gold, he'd buy coats for him and the minions. The villagers would need those too, since they had lost almost everything in Barova's fire. But they knew how to make new coats from the wool of their sheep, which was a skill that the haunt's inhabitants lacked. And the villagers weren't sharing. The tunnel carried the noise of metal clanging against metal, along with the welcome waves of heat from Yorjay's forge. Past the forge waited Andrina's herbalist workshop, and the brewery. Even further away, the tunnel had a direct line to the underground storage to reduce drones' travel time.
"Sorry it took so long," Ed told the witch as they stepped inside the chamber. "We needed a lot of transmuted resources to make it. So far, it's the most expensive room in the haunt."
As they spoke, his drones were putting the finishing touches on what would be Levy's dedicated research laboratory. When the drones saw him and Levy, they froze for a second, scurried to hide a tiny wooden statue underneath a table, and resumed working like nothing had happened.
"Oh!"
Levy gasped as she took in the sight of the place.
"Ed, you shouldn't have. I mean, of course you should have. Took you long enough. But you didn't have to make it so."
She gestured at the room, clearly at a loss for words. Bookcases wide enough to fill the halls of any of Earth's libraries stood against the walls, most of them empty, but some already furnished with blank books and rows of parchment rolls waiting for input. Shiny purple curtains hung behind the bookcases, completely covering the naked stone of the walls. A laser shark was sewn with silver thread in the purple of half the curtains, and the other half sported Levy's new insignia, a witch's hat with a skull and a crystal ball next to it. The magical torches gave the room an eerie, mystical ambiance and made the silver laser shark shine mysteriously without it moving at all. Heat spread into the main hall from a back room, Levy's quarters, which had their own chimney and their own section of private rooms. A brazier filled with incense gave the place a heavy floral aroma, courtesy of Andrina's concoctions.
It really wasn't that much effort, Ed said, his ears reddening slightly.
It was true, since the drones did most of the work, and he simply worked the design.
My dungeon engineering skill has been rising like crazy, so I feel confident trying new techniques.
The workbenches were filled with glass vials, ampules, and bottles, and also some tools that Ed could neither recognize nor guess their function, but which came with the basic design offered by his mantle's magic. Those strange tools were made of brass, mostly, but he saw a small iron knife, a tiny silver mirror, and a copper trinket that reminded him of a sextant.
Still, we don't have the materials to make half the tools here,
Levy whispered.
Glass? How did you get that one?
Actually, the glass was easy, said Ed. The drones transmuted dirt to sand first, then I used the sand as material for the room. Since your instruments are considered part of the design, objectivity accepted it, just like with the books.
Levy's smile became slightly manic, like it always did when she heard about Ed's constant explorations of what he could and couldn't do with magic. Using sand instead of glass was perfectly acceptable, though. On the other hand, a part of Ed's mind wondered what would happen if he made a room that included an Abrams tank and called it a tank garage. Technically, a tank was an integral part of a tank garage.
Probably best to leave it as a thought experiment. But that would really be something, wouldn't it?
He imagined Charon's expression when staring down the sights of the tank's cannon.
I'm glad you like it, he said aloud.
Levy studied the not-quite-a-sextant and toyed with its levers.
I don't even know where to begin. Apprentices of Chazen learned slowly, since the warlock used us to help with his own experiments but never bothered to teach us anything. We had to put things together ourselves in our free time, which wasn't often.
Trust me. I know the feeling, Ed said, thinking back on his own time as a non-paid intern. That time is over, though, for the two of us. Where do you want to start?
Levy thought it over.
It'll be faster if we find some books and real teachers. But there's a lot I can figure out on my own. My father taught me all the basics.
Ed refrained from saying anything as the witch paced all over, clearly getting used to her new dwellings and thinking furiously.
A corpse would be a good place to start,
she said at last.
It'll let me practice my ritual magic, summon spirits, bind them to my will, curse them. You know, witchcraft.
She wiggled her fingers at him, mimicking the casting of a spell.
A rabbit will work nicely. But ask Laurel to bring us the corpse of an enemy spider warrior or princess next time she kills one, too. I promise I'll be respectful-ish of their spirits, and it'll let me raise my skill rank so much faster.
Back when Ed had first arrived in Ivalis, he'd have been horrified at the prospect of summoning the spirits of the dead for practice and grinding skill ranks. Today, though, he didn't find it much worse than using dead bodies to study medicine. After all, with the shit he had seen and done, a bit of desecration couldn't faze him that much anymore.
Ritual magic? He asked instead.
Ah, sometimes I forget. Dungeon lords cast magic without understanding the theory behind it. Ritual magic is different from the spells we use day to day. Those come from our own body, and thus we can only cast a certain number of them until we become stronger. Ritual magic is powered by something external, a place of power, a god, a spirit. It's magic that takes a lot of time and resources, but you can technically use it whenever you like. The most powerful kind of ritual magic involves burning experience points. Your own, or, you know, those of others. That's one of the reasons why dungeon lords are so keen on human sacrifice, and why they are so dangerous.
I see, said Ed.
Levy was the daughter of a dungeon lord's concubine. Lord Hines had sacrificed many children to power his dungeon, and had he known that Levy wasn't actually his daughter, but one of his mages, she'd have suffered the fate of those many others. She was as against human sacrifice as Ed.
Those rituals involve altars to the dark? That's a pantheon from which I'd rather keep my distance.
Some, not all,
said Levy.
Rituals with dark gods are more of a warlock's line of business. Altars are risky. Please a minor god and he or she will reward you. At the very least, they could raise the magic the dungeon generates. But if you make an altar to the light, Alita could realize where the haunt is located and send her inquisitors knocking.
That left the dark as the only viable means of worship, and Ed wasn't keen on pursuing that option. Unless... Can the light scry into the location of a dark altar? He asked.
Not really. If either could do that, people could only worship them in heavily guarded forts.
The inkling of an idea worked its way into Ed's brain.
So, Levy, I've one question about magic. A long time ago, a demigod told me that even Murmur and Alita had to abide by the rulings of objectivity. Is that true?
She studied him worriedly.
Pretty much. According to most ancient texts, objectivity existed long before the first gods arrived in Ivalis. What do you have in mind?
Let me think about it, Ed said. Maybe there's a way to get access to holy water and a few other light advantages, without bending any rules.
I really hope you mean that last part,
Levy told him. The witch and the dungeon lord kept a content silence as they both considered what the future held for them. The haunt was stronger than ever because the people that composed it were stronger than ever. Nikolai's threat of 20 murders seemed a promise impossible to fulfill. Soon enough, Ed would be strong enough to go looking for the rebel, instead of biding his time inside his dungeon.
Thank you,
Levy said, bringing Ed back to reality. She was standing in the middle of the laboratory, circling it like a little girl in a dance hall.
It's even better than I imagined it.
Surely Kale's dungeon had a cooler laboratory, Ed said.
Levy stopped, brushed her hair away from her forehead, and seemed to visibly search for the right words.
You don't understand,
she said softly.
I worked in Kale's lab as an apprentice for Warlock Chazen, but not even Chazen thought of the lab as his. Kale's was Kale's. But you talk about this one as my laboratory. That makes it much better than I imagined it.
Ed was speechless. Sure, Ed knew the witch desired a laboratory. That was why he'd made it. But he hadn't realized what it meant for her. A pang of shame stabbed his chest. Making the laboratory had been a fun project, a challenge of magic and planning where he had tried to anticipate what Levy's needs would be, and either fix them or provide her with the means to solve them herself. He hadn't realized what it would represent for her emotionally. She and Alder hadn't led easy lives before meeting with him. It also made him wonder about Kale and the other Ivalian dungeon lords. What kind of person would it take to have so much freedom to build and create and not want to share it even a little? Ed had no idea about the inner workings of magic or rituals. Levy could do so much more if he allowed her to roam freely and explore her interests. In trying to focus all the power into themselves, the Ivalian dungeon lords had crippled the natural potential of their dungeons. Where they could have created a realm, they had been content simply to create rooms.
We'll show you, Ed thought fiercely. We'll show you all how it's done. Just wait.
Your dungeon engineering has increased by 2 ranks. Chapter 11. The Priest and the Batblin. The priest held the spicy chicken leg with clear distrust souring his face.
This attitude is getting annoying fast, Ed said, more to himself than to Zachary.
He pried the leg from Zachary's hands, gave it a good bite, then handed it to the priest. What back on Earth would have been an unforgivable slight, an Ivalis turned out to be required dining manners. Zachary's shoulders relaxed, and the priest began eating in earnest.
Alita's mercy, the priest muttered. It's been so long since I had meat this good.
Ed found the hell chicken's flavor to be not much better than Earth's normal poultry, except it had a tiny aftertaste of sulfur if you paid attention. He wasn't about to complain, though, because he hadn't eaten good meat in a long time either, and Andrina's seasoning made it downright godly. The priest and the dungeon lord ate in silence, hands flying over the table so fast that it made the brass goblets wobble. The table was served with exclusive haunt specialties, ale and hell chicken steak with a side of salad, bread, and goat cheese.
To be honest, Lord Edward, your invitation surprised me. I admit I didn't peg you, at first, to be one to care about the health of your soul, given its current, situation.
Ed took notice that all it had taken to make Zachary stop addressing him as "you heathen dungeon lord" had been a warm meal. If only everyone else was as easy to convince.
"Yes, my soul," Ed assured him. "If we're being honest, I invited you here to have a talk about it. The haunt requires your services, Zachary."
Zachary's mouth froze mid-bite, his eyes wide like a man who had found out he could turn rice into gold.
"Really? And you'd like me to..."
"You'll want to see it for yourself. Come with me," Ed said.
After that, Zachary devoured what little remained on his plate, belched loudly, and wiped the grease from his face with a cloth. Both Dungeon Lord and Priest stood, and a drone dressed in a black vest and a white handkerchief in his tiny hand came to clean the table. The drone had been Levy's idea, a touch of luxury to keep Zachary mesmerized. The priest eyed the drone butler.
"Nice to see some civilization and decency coming to this wretched place. I meant Cerevos, my lord, not your haunt."
The two of them left Ed's private quarters, which were not much different from the others he had made lately, and Ed led the way toward the haunt's section that was perpendicular to Levy's research and development, and behind the recently installed kitchens, which were close to the living quarters of the Batblins in the public mess hall.
"As I was saying," Ed said, going over the speech that he, Levy, and Alder had practiced, "the haunt's spiritual well-being interests me greatly. It mirrors my own, I think. The influence of the dark is terrible and almost irresistible. But with the help of a man of the faith, maybe..."
He left the idea hanging, hoping it'd take root in Zachary's mind.
"The light's influence is stronger," Zachary said. "I could show you."
"And in exchange, you'll only need a bit of that civilization you keep talking about," Ed thought.
It suited him just fine, because he planned to give those same comforts to everyone in the haunt, not just himself and Zachary. The haunt's section where Ed brought Zachary was very much a work in progress. It had only two rooms, and one of those was right underneath the other, hidden from sight.
"By Alita's grace!"
Zachary exclaimed when they arrived at the first of those two rooms.
"This is... you really are serious?"
Ed nodded gravely.
"But the light! Aren't you afraid they'll find us? I mean, find you, if they sense this place of worship?"
Zachary asked. The chapel was a modest version of the one Ed had seen in the catacombs, smaller and less expensive. It had four benches, two on each side, and a humble altar overseeing the place atop a raised dais. It had no windows, but Ed had managed to use the magical torches to give it the otherworldly feeling that was a required ingredient of such places. The tiny chimney and fireplace near a corner gave it the final touch.
"In the militant church's scriptures, it is written that a clean soul has nothing to fear from the judgment of the light," said Ed.
He had no idea what else was written in the scriptures, because he was simply parroting back what Alder had told him to say.
"If, with your help, we can keep the souls of everyone here, including me, clean, there is nothing to fear, is there?"
Zachary looked unconvinced, and he gulped loudly, like a man with his feet too close to the fire.
"I'm not sure the light,
His lips twitched again. The priest was trapped because he couldn't admit that the light sometimes overdid its zealousness in dealing with the competition. It was time for Ed to go for the kill.
"I'm sure the gods have greater concerns than purging the haunt. In fact, we're actively fighting against their enemies, so we're already allies," Ed said. "However, let's give the light some time to acclimate, yes? I understand the gods can be slow to change their ways."
"Yes, indeed," said Zachary, jumping on the rope that he was being offered. "Alita and the Golden Cohorts have little need for change, since they are already perfect. Mostly."
That last word he said while gazing over his shoulder at the altar.
"Sure, sure. How about we compromise? You man this chapel, but dedicate it to a minor light god, someone like Oinus. I heard he's easier to please than his brothers."
Oinus was the god of commerce, according to Alder. He was beloved by merchants because he was the only light god that accepted coin instead of prayer and other time-consuming forms of worship.
"It may It may work, said Zachary. But the risk...
Let me worry about the risk, Zachary. I know what I'm doing, said Ed,
and he hoped he was telling the truth, because he knew what he was doing.